This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 637 with Mike Weger, recorded on February 20th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation. All for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios in a freezing. Mike, I don't remember a string of negative days like we've had. Like, it's been negative 10 or below the last 3 or 4 days. I think tomorrow's the last day of it, right? Do you remember?
Yeah, I haven't either. Not this cold, right? Like, yeah. we'll have single digits a lot.
For
not
sure.
Negative yeah. 8, 10, yeah. 12. That's not wind chill either. Not, like, usually we'll get down there with wind chill, but it's just been frigid.
Negative 40 in some places with the wind chill, and like 4 or 5 days in a row. I don't remember it being this cold. I've been here 30 years, and I don't remember it being this cold this long. Now, Monday, 50. This is all Fahrenheit. 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So we're going to be out there. You know what Nebraskans do when you come off a cold streak and then it's 50, shorts. You're going to be turning the water on in your lawn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll be getting the kiddie pool out. It'll be great.
Oh, yeah. The kids will be wanting to run around in their swim trunks.
Pool out. We've put the snow in there the day before. And the next day, you have a pool.
I know.
It's fantastic.
Just bizarre world. Anyways. We'll post the show with some world-class show notes at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. Thank you, or for those of you who are on the Patreon team. During my break, Mike, I did have one person drop. I kind of wonder, did they think I quit? I was gone for 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Do they think you stopped?
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Anyways, listen, Patreon is up to you. 1 month, as many months as you want. Many of you have been supporting me a long time. Thanks for doing that. Check it out today, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then don't forget, you can use the affiliate link that's on the site out there at theaverageguy.tv. You'll see a little red banner. It says this site is supported with the Amazon affiliate links, whatever. Click through. That's all you need to do. That sets your cookie for, I don't know, some amount of time. Doesn't matter to me. If you want it, I mean, it does. I appreciate you when you do it. But if you want to do that, check it out today, theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to Christian, who joined us last week. If you haven't gone back, a lot of updates going on with Christian. Not only did he have LASIK surgery, I don't know if you got a chance to listen, Mike, but he did LASIK, and he's looking handsome. I mean, we used to say handsome Mike, but maybe it's handsome Christian now.
There we go.
There. Yeah.
I like it.
And of course they're due in a month. So I told him, yeah, let's get into May and then we'll have you back on and catch up. But big thanks to Christian who joined last week. Mike Weger is here. Kind of bookend my break a little bit. Christian was in the middle of that. But Mike, good to see you back. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me back. I was excited when I saw, because usually for all the people in the chat and listeners, these are scheduled around my breaks in hockey. So if we ever have a random Thursday where we don't have hockey, I ping Jim. I'm like, okay, I have this coming up Thursday. And so this worked out. We had two Thursdays on your bookends that hockey tonight.
No, super good. I was supposed to come over on Sunday and pick up the Meshtastic thing from you. I was on my calendar. I felt so bad. I was just like, I'm not going over. And then I figured you'd be probably busy doing something else.
Well, anyway. It didn't even dawn on me until yesterday when I was like, I saw a podcast. I'm like, wait, I thought he was supposed to come over before. Looked up at the family count. I'm like, oh, yeah, it was supposed to be Sunday. I should have reached out to him. But
yeah, I didn't feel like going anywhere. It's super cold here anyway. So we never made it together. But Kyle in our Discord group had asked the question, hey, what's going on with the board game? You talked about that last time you were on. Give us an update. What's going on? Is it ready? Are you guys Mattel or Hasbro now? What's going on?
We are close. And I feel like there's not even that much of an update since last time, because I feel like we were working on the same thing. You know, my dad and I have never taken any like physical item to market, right? There's just, we've never done it before. We've never produced anything. So we have been we've been trying out a bunch of 3D print farms to see who we like the best to put these orders in through. And we just keep running into like, we'll order 3 batches from the same company and they'll all come out different colors. And it's like, well, our oranges kind of need to be oranges and they kind of need to match, especially because we pair up 3D printed items with already produced items that we source. So we need the color to be relatively the same. And then the quality of the prints and just those sort of things. So we're kind of going through like a quality control thing right now. So much so that we thought about, do we just print them ourselves? Do we buy an extra printer and just have this be a super limited thing for now? Until we could afford injection molding, because that's really where you need to go is injection molding to get fit and finish and consistency. But we've been trying, we're still trying to make it work. So we've got a few other producers that we've been working with, try and get it done. My dad actually, right before I got on the show, he just picked up my latest prototypes. He's still finishing out some other pieces. So I had those printing. So we're really close. We've also come up with, there's going to be a travel sized version of the game. That's a lot smaller. So we shrunk everything down, something you could, you know, put in a bag and just play. So we've been things to add. The website is built, ready to go, looks great. We just can't make it go live yet because if we took an order, we couldn't fulfill it. So I will definitely let you guys know. I really appreciate you guys actually asking about that. It is exciting. You know, this is my dad's retirement gig, like I mentioned last time. So he's having so much fun with it. And it's just fun to see him super passionate about something. And it's fun to do a project with your dad. So I'll let you guys know when we have the website live. I'll put it in the Discord.
You guys could never make a penny.
Oh,
and it's worth every freaking cent you spent, right? Because you get to spend all this time with your dad. And that's pretty awesome.
Well, and what we're learning is like, this is not going to be a money-making endeavor. Production is just really expensive unless you go offshore or unless do a lot of things. So like, the margin on these things is pretty nominal. Very nominal. So much so that we're actually kind of disappointed in the price we have to charge because we think it's a little too high. And we're going to think, people are going to think we're making a lot of money on it and we're barely even scraping any profit off. But it's a very fun world to kind of dive into and to learn about and learn on the fly.
Well, it's hard to do these things. I think some people think, you know, the world of entrepreneurialism is just like, I have an idea, take it to market, the money flows in, you know, and you're like, no, doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Not the way it works. Yep.
Yeah. Ryan Kirschner says, the best 3D print farm is your own 3D print farm. Sounds like you need more printers.
Yeah.
I've watched some 3D print farm YouTube videos, guys that just show what they're printing and how they do it. And it's a process.
It is.
I mean, it is a process.
And you kind of, what makes my dad and I such a good team is I love the printing side. I cannot CAD anything. I can't design it. My brain doesn't work that way. I have no artistic talent. That's my dad. My dad hates messing with a printer. So when I tell him like, oh yeah, the print bed messed up and I lost that print, he's like, I'm glad you're doing that because that would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
But the problem is I don't have much time. And so I could have 10 printers, but I have to have the time to be able to do the printing. So he actually
needs a third partner. You need a third partner.
Yeah, and not even a third partner, but he actually did find someone kind of like him and I it's a guy in Kansas City, which is where they primarily live, who just is a huge passion project. And so when he comes home, he does this on the side. So his prices are really reasonable because it's just for fun. And he's gotten really excited about it. So this guy is like, ooh, this is fun. So yeah, it's a good process to kind of go through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, okay. Well, if you want to stay up to date on this, join us in the Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Mike will post the link there. We can check it out. Mike, we, of course, will have to do some kind of launch show here. We'll have to figure out how do you show it and, like, you know, how do we demo the game so that folks can get a good idea for it.
I definitely will.
And we'll encourage everybody to go out and pick up a copy of it, however that works.
Yeah,
get it done. Will it be U.S. only, you think, or will you be able to ship overseas once you're done?
We'll probably start U.S. only, just to start out, because that's where the manufacturers are going to be, and shipping costs and everything. And then I think it'll be really fun. We're really trying to expand how many cities we have custom tops for, because that's the fun part. So if you're in like Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, New York, we have the tops of buildings in your city.
Nice.
So that'll be kind of the fun part too. So we're trying to make sure we can really get us. We have Dallas and we have like so many, London and all these crazy cool cities.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we'll keep friends posted here, and it'll be fun to keep track of it going forward. So
yeah, appreciate it.
Keep up to date on that as well. Hey, okay. Two words I never thought I would ever hear coming out of your mouth. And I don't know why, but you said I've gotten totally into. Now, you're not going to believe what I'm going to say. Well, maybe you will. You know Mike Weegar. Ice fishing. Seriously. Yeah. Tell me what's going on.
Well, so here's the problem, Jim. And you and I have joked about this all the time. When I get into something, I like have to go all in.
Oh, yeah.
To your point, the weather here in Nebraska has been extremely cold, colder than usual. My boys are to the age where being pent up inside for the whole winter is not good for mom and dad or the boys. Yeah. So we were really looking for things to do outside. And my cousin just so happened to, he's been doing this for a few years. He's like, Mike, you really got to come out with me sometime. You got to come try this. And I'm like, I don't know. Ice fishing, man. You're out in the cold. He's like, no. He's like, you're in a shack, right? We pop up this essentially like a deer blind is what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's insulated. Yeah. You have a heater. I see. He goes, you don't even have you have your coat on inside. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. So he had us out. So it took the boys out. And the moment I set foot in that shack, I was like, I'm straight up addicted. And I think here's the reason. So for ice fishing, you know, I've always really enjoyed fishing, but I've never had a boat or known anyone who has a boat. So I've always fished from the shore. Yeah. And it's always difficult, right? So with ice fishing, you can go to anywhere on that lake you want. You drill right down. And when you ice fish, you use a sonar. So you drill your hole, you put your sonar in. It's like playing a video game, Jim. You're seeing the fish on the sonar and you see your bait and you see them swimming right up to your bait and you know right as they're about to bite and you can pull. And my son's kind of the same way because we only have one sonar right now. And I might have to get a second one because he wants it in his fishing hole all the time. Because he's like, Dad, it's like playing a video game.
Yeah.
So it was kind of one of those perfect combos of it's outdoors in the winter, something to actually enjoy this cold weather for.
Yeah.
And then the technology part of it with the sonar and everything has gone electric, which is also nice. So your big augers, right, that you use to drill the hole in the ice, those were historically gas augers.
Yep.
And
yep.
When you run those in the shack, you have all the fumes you're dealing with and everything. Yeah. Those have all gone electric now. So you have a big battery, just like you do your power tools. And it's fantastic. So there's like a little bit of a tech angle there too, of how far that's come. But man, it's been the most addicting thing.
What are you using to heat? Like, so you got the shed.
Yep.
It holds four, maybe, right? Something like that.
Yeah, I got the double one. So okay, it holds like
of course.
Six. Yeah, I've of had about course. Six of us out there.
Yeah, okay. Four, six, seven. What are you heating? How do you heat?
Mr. Buddy heater, just those ones with, and mm-hmm. you know, some days, depending if I'm going out for short or long periods, I'll use the small tanks or take a big propane tank and the adapter.
Yeah.
Because the way you do it is you essentially buy a sled, like a big utility sled. You load everything in there and you drag that sled out to your spot. And so you've got your hut in there, your heater, your fishing poles, your tackle box, everything in this massive sled, and you're trucking it along. You have a rope around your waist and you're heading out there. But yeah, the heater, I will say, I think is something I probably need to upgrade for next year because I'm already planning. Because although we had crazy good temperatures for ice this week, by next week, this will probably be the last good ice fishing weekend for it to be safe to be out there. So already looking forward to next season. I'm kind of planning out, okay, what adaptations, what things do you want? Yeah, different heater. The Mr. Buddies, I have the single pane is the way I call it. They have like the pane that heats up.
Yep.
Then there's the double. And then there's the one that has the cylinder that heats up and the whole thing around it. Yeah. I think a bigger heater would be good.
Mr. Heater, big Mr. buddy. Heater. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what we have in the shed, the smoke shack, the rusty nail. It has a big buddy heater in it. So.
And is that the one with the cylinder that heats up?
No, this is the flat one. Looks like a... You know, it looks like an old radio. You know, it's got a handle on top. It's got the grill on front. Two plates. They make a single plate or a double plate.
Single's what I have. Okay. And it works. What makes those things crazy efficient is if you get the heat powered fan and put it on top.
Yes.
That's a game changer for those. Really sends that heat out. Because otherwise, especially in an ice shack, that heat's going straight up. Right. And in an ice shack, you have two little vents to allow fresh air in. That heat's just going up and out.
Yeah.
So having that fan. And talk about a piece of technology that still blows my mind. I don't know how a heat-powered fan works. But it is the craziest concept to me that heat is what powers that fan to spin. They've been around forever, right?
Like
on wood-fired stoves.
For sure.
In houses it was the first time I'd ever had to use one, and I just thought they
put off some serious heat. Like I've got a fan, so in the rusty nail, I've got a fan that sits, it's a little fan, but it sits over the big buddy heater, and you know, I reach up, turn it on, and it's the goal is to get the hot air at the top, then push it back down to the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And man, my jeans will get a little toasty, like if you got that thing on at all. And so that's a very good, and it'll.
So is that powered by the heat, or is that a battery powered?
No, it's electric.
Powered. Okay,
it's got a little USB, so a little USB into a plug and stuff. Like I could run it off anything, but no, I thought about getting some of those, and then I actually found, you know, I installed the air conditioner in there last year. For the summer, so I could be out there in the summer with the air on. And then I thought, why am I not just turning that heat air conditioner on, but just leaving the AC off and turning the fan on? And that fan does a nice job of blowing that air right across the thing, and it's just beautiful that way. However, I was out there on Sunday, and I was out there last Friday, maybe, or maybe it was Monday night. I think it was Monday night. Frozen. Solid. That fan is not coming on at the moment. Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, frozen. Turn it on. You saw you hit. You know. So I mean, because it sticks out the back of the it's a window air unit, right? So it sticks out the back of the shed, and it's super frozen. Yeah, those are great heaters. They're good little. I bought the ones that you put on top of your propane tank that's got the round. Like you say, it's got the round burner on it. And I bought those are always getting recalled, by the way, all the time.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're super dangerous. I don't know if I would use, there's ones with double. I like, well, you're talking about it. There's a cylinder one that they make. And then the single pane and the double pane Big Buddy heaters.
Yeah.
For those situations, they're light. They're easy to move around. They used to, by the way, have fans in them. And they took them out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they took them out. I don't know what they must have been a design problem or something, but they used to have
third party market for them is great. Cause the one I got was $17. It's even got the little latch. It goes right onto that grate.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it heats up enough, it starts spinning and,
you worry about falling through. I mean, okay. You're creating heat.
Yep.
You're sitting on ice. You worry about it, all that ice giving way and you going into the lake.
Not if you do it safely. So the way they say is you need at least 4 inches of ice to have people out there. 4 inches, you're more than solid. Anything more than that, you're great. You can start driving an ATV on it around like 10, right? And then people obviously up in the cold, they drive their SUVs onto those things. As it gets thinner, as the weather, you know, it's kind of iffy ice. It's called spud bar. So you just have a big iron bar that as you're walking out, you're kind of stabbing, and if you can notice it crack at all, you avoid it. But it's a little scarier when there's snow on top because you can't see.
Right.
So I don't, that's a little scarier. And the snow insulates the ice. So actually the ice builds slower with snow. So even though we had great temperatures this week, that layer of snow on top insulated,
and we didn't grow
as much ice. But even last week when I was out there, so you drill and then you have a spoon to get all the ice out of the hole. It has a measuring tape on it. So we were 7 to 8 inches last weekend when we were out there. So more than enough.
Oh, this week you could, I'm sure it's even thicker now.
It's probably gonna be 10 or 12.
It's been so cold. The one thing with the weather that's changed is we used to go long periods where the cold was consistent. So it was like 20 or 15 or 10. And we'd go 45, 50 days where it would never get above that temperature. It'd be, you know, it would be 5 at night, 15 in the afternoon type deal. What's really changed in the last 4, 5, 6 years or decade maybe is the wild swings in temperature. So, you know, negative 20 and then 50 2 days later, right? I mean, we see a lot more of that happening as well.
Which is not good for like things, meaning like those drastic temperature changes for homes and for cars and for anything outdoors. That's tough on stuff to have those big swings in temperature.
The
only other thing I'll say is, you know, for the one person that listens who thought about getting into ice fishing, the cool part about the electronics part for the sonar is in the last few years, they've come with a new technology called LiveScope, which is essentially, it looks like an iPad screen, and it's more 3D kind of is the best way I can describe it. You can actually see fish moving towards like left and right and towards you. It's like having a camera kind of, they have cameras too, but this is still sonar. What that has done is it's made the regular sonar that just kind of shows pings at different heights, right? Like, ooh, I can see something's at 15 feet, something's at 20 feet. It's made that really cheap. So the live scopes, you're going to spend $2,000 to $5,000 on a live scope. I got a Garmin, just regular sonar, for $180. Right. So you can, it's made those extremely affordable. So it's kind of a good time to get into it if you want to. Now, as soon as you get it and as soon as you see someone with a live scope, you're going to want the live scope. Yeah. But I just went with the cheap one and it works great. It's the same thing. You see where the fish are and it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Does the gear change? You know, I remember going out as a kid with a, you know, with a pole, still a pole. Is it shorter? Do you
much shorter need- pole?
Okay.
So I actually got, they make actual ice fishing rods, which are shorter. You could even just use a kid's rod, depending on what you're trying to catch. Around here, we're not Minnesota, right? We don't have huge northern pike. We don't have massive walleye. We don't have lake trout that are huge. So you're catching bass, catfish, a lot of panfish. We did a fish fry this past weekend. We went out and I had the day off. So I caught we caught over 100 fish. It was wild.
Really?
Yeah. Three of us in there for a few hours and caught over 100. So we fried up some crappie and some bluegill. But yeah, so shorter rods. And then the big thing with ice fishing is you're using like a tungsten jig. Tungsten's really heavy, so it falls quicker because you got to think you're just straight above the spot.
Yeah.
So you're not using bobbers. You're not using lures in the traditional way you would normally use a lure, where you're throwing it out and casting it back in. You're usually just jigging with a jig or a spoon or something like that. And then That's they cool. love wax worms. So wax worms and maggots are really what you're using. You're not using worm. You're using the little tiny maggoty wax worms thing.
Oh, wax maggots, not real maggots.
Or real maggots.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
they're red. That's why I'm not good at fishing.
They're still in my fridge upstairs in the container. Yeah. But they're tiny. I mean, these things are super tiny. And they're red, too. So the red maggots are what the crappies just love them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
Next season, I'm going to get you out there. That's where we'll meet up next season.
No, I'm good.
Really?
I just don't. It's cold. My feet get cold. I don't like fishing. No.
You don't like fishing. There you go.
No, okay. I'll
lay the rubber mats down. So your feet is on a nice insulated mat and it's hot. We have our coats off. We're just in, you could be in short sleeve shirt.
We it's smoke like cigars 65 in there? Degrees. It's like smoke cigars.
I could.
In there?
Yeah, what? You could. Why
maybe,
not?
Maybe that'd be the.
All fish, you smoke a cigar.
No right. kids, no kids at that point. But,
yeah,
but we'll can't have Harrison taking on secondhand smoke.
Like Jim, pass that over. Let me take it.
Harrison's like, Dad, can I? Yeah. And you're like, no, cool.
Yeah.
No. Justin says in the chat, he says, we're talking about my AC unit in the smoke shack. He says, does your ACs there not have reverse cycle heat pumps, basically? All the ones here, except perhaps some of the large commercial ones, have a heat cycle. Ours are pretty much all heat pump style units. Yeah, we have those as well. But they're way more expensive. And when you can buy just window air conditioners, right, that don't have the heat pump, very reasonable. As an example, I have a mini air conditioner. I mean, it's a 10 by 12 space. So I have a small air conditioner. It was $119 for the air conditioner. Heat pump, to the minimum $6,000 to put a mini split in there. And it's just more complicated that way. Now, would I do a heat pump now? Probably. Like this would have been a lot easier if I just would have had a air conditioner and a heat pump to give me some heat in there. But it works just fine, you know, to have the air unit. In fact, if I were doing it again, I would put the air conditioner maybe right behind the heater so that heat blows, you know, that the air conditioner would blow and you just turn the fan on and then the heat comes on. So yeah, Justin, I thought about doing a heat pump. It was just cheaper to buy an air conditioner only. I was only worried about cool air at the time. And then I actually bought one this summer when the power went out. And we didn't have the house wired quite yet for whole house power. I bought a 110 volt version so I could at least have something running in here to keep it kind of, you know, it's a super efficient air conditioner. So that'll replace when I burn out the one in the current one that I have when it takes on too much cigar smoke. I'll replace it with that one as well. So Justin, thanks for that question. Well, we'll keep up with you, Mike, on the ice fishing. Let's get an update from you. You know, you kind of had been going down the path of one server to rule them all, so to speak. You got me thinking a little bit about that too. I spent a little time after the show, like, Now I have a pretty nice, you know, I built a pretty nice rig that's got a GPU in it. It's got 128 gig of RAM. I've got plenty of space, hard drive space on it. I've put some spinners in there. I mean, the hard drive space is pretty cheap right now. So if I wanted to upgrade it, I could. Where are you at with that? What did you find out?
Yeah. Still the plan is to go one server rules them all. I think I've narrowed it down. I think I'm going to go with that HL15, that server chassis. I have suffered enough, Jim. I've put in the work. I put in the time of suffering with really crappy server rack cases. You know, the one I have now, it holds 15 drives, but there's no backplane to it. So it's all the individual, right? I have the HBA card and I have all those cords running and they're finicky. And even last week I was dealing with issues with that cord, got a little too close to the GPU and my hard drives were starting to flake out on me. And it was driving me nuts. And so, yeah, you have a pulled up here and I think it's just time. They're expensive. They're not cheap. That just the chassis with a backplane, no motherboard, no CPU is $900. Yeah.
Yowza.
It's a lot. So that's why I haven't pulled the trigger yet. I mean, this is one of those you have to save for. So not just a spontaneous, you know, talk about it on the show and buy it. But the chassis is fantastic. Comes with the backplane I would need. And then right now I've been slowly, because I run Unraid, best part of an Unraid is you can slowly upgrade your drives. So I've gone through from 2 to 4 terabytes, and now I have 3 of the 15 I have left are 4 terabytes. So I've been going to 12. So I have 12 terabyte drives in there now. I think if I did this, I would go ahead and get 20 terabyte drives and just start with that. But even there, right, I'm going to spend $1,800 on hard drives just for 6 of them, because those 20 terabytes are about $300.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So when you have to buy them all at once. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a $3,000-ish server at this point. And we haven't even added the motherboard and CPU, which is tough. Yeah. And so I've kind of narrowed down to exactly what I want. But I've been doing some different things to tide me over. Cause really the reason I haven't pulled the trigger is cause I'm not running in, like, I don't have a bottleneck today, right? I don't have a need for that. It's just ease and simplicity of servicing it would be really nice, but I can't justify $3,000 on a new server right now. Yeah. But what I have been doing in the meantime is still similar concept, but I've been getting away from virtualizing things. So you know me, I need a new project, so I have you know, physical boxes for everything, and then I start virtualizing everything, and I go back and forth. And I was at a stage a few weeks ago where everything was virtualized. I had my PFSense router was virtualized on Proxmox. My TrueNAS NAS, so Unraid's my main box, I do have that, but my other NAS was TrueNAS, that was virtualized in Proxmox. Everything, Frigate, all of my security camera stuff, everything was virtualized. And so I looked at my hardware and I said, you know what, like, one of the benefits of not having gone one server to rule them all is I have a lot of boxes. I have a lot of things I could take this all back, not virtualize it. And I think the biggest pain point for me was Proxmox. When everything's in a cluster, it really likes it when everything's on the same version. So if I want to update one of my boxes, I've got to update all of them. And that means my PFSense box is one that needs to go down. And when internet's down, I went to do an upgrade last week. Within 90 seconds of taking the router offline just to do something, I had 3 text messages and my kids had run downstairs. The text messages were from people that were trying to use Plex. Hey, is Plex down? And then the kids are like, Dad, the movie's not playing. What's going on? So I just, as much as I can get away from that as possible. So I had an R210, like a Dell R210 that had just been collecting dust in the server rack still. When I went away from a PFSense physical box, I stopped using it. I had gone onto the Zima board. But I was like, you know what? Let's go back to that. So I took the PFSense box back onto the Dell R210. And then I had bought last year, just off a whim, Facebook Marketplace, some guy was getting rid of a bunch of his homemade servers like we make. And one of them was a cool chassis that had 6 hot swap bays on the front. I've never had hot swap bays, even with any of my servers. So I did grab that last year for cheap. He was selling for like $70 with some hard drives, with some hardware in there. He's like, I just want it gone. The case alone, I looked it up, was like a $300 case. So I took TrueNAS and put that, and I actually have a physical TrueNAS box now. And what I will say is one thing that I have started to dabble with Unraid, because Unraid's been starting to add it to their system, is ZFS. Now everyone here is super familiar with ZFS, I'm sure, but for me it's something I haven't played around too much with, because it's very new to Unraid. It's not how Unraid has historically run their pool, and one of the cool parts about doing this now, Jim, is especially with TrueNAS, with Electric Eel, which is kind of their latest software, they have added a lot of the new features that ZFS has released. The biggest one being, you can now add single drives to your pools at a time. So you can expand that ZFS pool by one drive without having to replace all the drives in it, without having to add a whole new VDEV. You can just extend the VDEV. So that's something new. And then TrueNAS implemented that at the end of last year into Electric Eel, which is their latest. So it's kind of a good time for me to start playing around with ZFS. And then two of my main pools in Unraid, my app data and things I use for Docker and VMs, are ZFS pools. And so ZFS replication is just a breeze. I love it. Snapshots and ZFS replication. So essentially what that TrueNAS box has become for me is a backup destination. It reaches into Unraid, it grabs what it needs. For ZFS, it just does the ZFS replication from the snapshots. For all my other pools in Unraid, it does an rsync clone, pulls it all in. And so I have a local copy there really fast. And ZFS is just like a TrueNAS box. That storage is fast. I have six hard drives, 6 4-terabyte hard drives. I have an SSD cache on there, which I've come to learn after learning a lot about ZFS. The read cache is actually not that beneficial. I maybe should look at putting a log in there as well. It's extremely fast. So that's a local backup destination. And then what I also love about TrueNAS is a TrueNAS to TrueNAS backup is also drop dead easy. So what I did was I took a really small PC, and I did this a while ago, put it at my in-laws' house, and I put TrueNAS on that box. And then setting up a TrueNAS to TrueNAS backup is extremely easy. So that's been kind of my use case for TrueNAS. TrueNAS also went to Docker instead of Kubernetes for their apps, to like, you know, when you're the app store on TrueNAS, when you want to run Plex or whatever. So I did switch my Frigate, which is still what I use for my DVR for the house, or sorry, NVR for my security cameras. I do run that on the TrueNAS box. But what I've really liked about TrueNAS, it's just a really good NAS platform. I still prefer to run apps on either Unraid or the rest of my Docker containers, just run on a Docker VM on Proxmox. TrueNAS is just, they have that storage down to a science. Replications, backup, like that, it is just a rock solid platform. And right now, it's re-silvering, it's expanding the pool, because I found an extra 4-terabyte drive. I'm like, ooh, I can shove it in the box and make it bigger. And those sort of things just weren't options with ZFS a few years ago, at least not in TrueNAS, they weren't. So that's been kind of the project.
Yeah. Really. No, TrueNAS Core. Are you using the Core version?
Scale. No, I'm using Scale. So I'm using the full Linux version. I figured and that's where Electric Eel and some of those allows you to get some of those features. I haven't had any issues, but to be fair, I'm not a good person to ask, because I've never run Core. Ever since I got interested in TrueNAS, Scale has been around. Okay. So I've either been Unraid or TrueNAS Scale. Have you ever run either TrueNAS Core or Scale?
I have not run either. I've been looking at TrueNAS, though. I've got a box that had Windows 10 on it. I updated it to 11 through the hack. Now it's given me like, well, we're not going to send updates to you because it's old hardware. Yeah. And so I've been thinking like, okay, do I throw on a Linux version of something here? Do I just do Ubuntu desktop? Do I look to TrueNAS? There's a couple versions of home server stuff that you can use, pretty easy to use. What's crazy is I forgot how Linux and Mac OS are almost identical in so many ways. It had been a while since I had run anything Linux. And I boot that thing up and I'm like, oh, this looks like the Mac. like, this really looks like the Mac. And so it was like, oh, I know where everything's at. Okay, this makes total sense. So I even did a Fedora instance just to kind of see, hey, what does this look like? What are they doing? What are these now? Just to see, well, I'm going to run this Windows box till it absolutely doesn't run anymore, but I thought it'd be good to have. So I looked at TrueNAS as maybe an option for that box. It's got 5, 10, 13, 14 drives in it. So it'd be like, I thought about Unraid, but then it's like $100 a year or maybe $200 a year because you're
a year now.
Well, on Unraid, I think, didn't they switch to a annual?
Oh, I don't know. I'm grandfathered in if they did.
Yeah.
Cause mine, I still have the same license I've had forever. Maybe. Is it an annual subscription now?
I thought maybe they moved that direction and they pulled back. I don't know. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It's a free box right now. So I'm kind of like,
yeah. You know, are all the drives the same size?
No. And I don't need them rated. I just a bunch of disks is fine with me.
Got it.
I just need them. I'm using a stable bit drive pool, an old piece of software from our home server days, to pull it to a single drive so that it can be seen by the miner, right? That's the whole purpose, right? So that Chia can see it. And so it's not a lot. I don't need a lot, but I don't want Unraid for something like that. I don't need all that overhead. Not that Unraid's a lot overhead, but I don't need all that NAS stuff. I really just need the drives exposed. And if I can pool them, awesome. Yeah. Right?
So then TrueNAS would be great if your drives were the same size.
Yeah. That's the NAS. That's the NAS problem, right?
That's the NAS problem. Except for Unraid, right? That's where Unraid's fantastic, is they don't.
Yeah, no, true.
That's what I've loved about the whole time. True.
Yeah. I looked at Open Media Vault. That was another one that I looked at, which was, you know, again, these are all fallouts from the old home server days. And so I don't know. Well, it still works. So I'm not necessarily in a hurry to replace it. Do you think
that would be interesting to learn? Like, does StableBit exist on Linux, or do they probably have something
Windows similar? Only? It's Windows only. Yeah, it's Windows only.
See, those are the fun projects I like. I'm like, ooh, now I get to learn how does someone on Linux do this? Yeah. How do they pool all their drives together when they need them?
Well, and to be honest, Mike, I thought like, okay, maybe because it's a self-contained box. It's got, you know, the board itself has 6 SATA connections, and then I have a backplane in there that's PCIe backplane, and I think that has 8. So I would need a board that have PCIe, which every board has that.
Yeah.
And you know, enough SATA ports. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll just upgrade that to a new modern, fairly inexpensive motherboard chip and memory. Because the current board only has 8 gig on it today. So like there's not a lot I want to do anymore with 8 gig of RAM for the most part.
Right. No.
So, you know, modern board, I don't need to go 128. I could go 64 and that'd be plenty. And so we're $200 or so for a board, chip, and maybe 3 memory, right? Just to, and then pull the old stuff out, put the new stuff in, slap the PCI card in there for the backplane, and Bob's your uncle at that point. I'm $300. You know, I could probably get away with an AMD chip on the thing, you know, a Ryzen 5, kind of what I've got in my current gaming rig or, you know, the virtualization rig, so to speak. So I've been thinking about that too. And then I like, well, I'm going to run this thing till it runs, till it stops running. Like
why break it?
Yeah. I don't do anything on it. It just needs to run. So do I need to worry about security patches? It's got Windows 11. Although, you know, that doesn't matter if they stop patching it. So I have to figure out. Listen, Microsoft's confused about what they're going to do with these Windows 10 boxes that don't meet the TPM and the processor requirement. They got really relaxed on it for a while. And they're like, oh, yeah, just change this registry, edit, and put 11 on. It'll be fine. Then they were like, no, actually, we're not going to let you do that. And so the most recent update I got to that box that I upgraded with the little hack on it, which was their hack, by the way. It's not somebody else doing it. This was their hack, right? They published this. I get this little warning message, and it's a fix. You know, it's an update fix. And when it goes to fix it, it scans the computer for the TPM requirements. Then it says, you don't have TPM, you know, sorry. And so those are confusing messages for Microsoft.
Yeah.
You know, if you're listening to this and you still have a Windows 10 box, I would have told you 3 weeks ago, don't worry about it. There's ways to upgrade to Windows 11. You'll get updates. It'll be fine. Today, nah, I think the kind of like our government has changed rapidly. Microsoft has changed rapidly, right?
And yeah.
They're kind of like, yeah, I don't think we're going to let you do that now. And so I don't know. It's one of those kinds of things. Mike, let me ask you this question. Okay, so, you know, the box that I'm running this Windows thing on now is a Core i3-550 or whatever. It's 12 years old. Like, it's old. Runs great, right? I mean, it does its job. Do you replace it, or do you just limp it along doing the best you can? Or do I install Linux on it? What would you do?
That would become, well, I mean, it's exactly what I almost did. That became my TrueNAS box. So maybe you do an upgrade, but I always keep that hardware because that's great NAS. That is a perfect NAS system, right? But I mean, kind of to what you said, so I've had this iMac since, what year would I have gotten this iMac? 2012. So it's 13 years old.
Yeah.
And it runs like a dog with the old Mac software on it. So last month I went and put Ubuntu on it. Man, Linux has a great way of making hardware feel new again. And Windows love making your hardware feel old. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, cause Mac, I couldn't do any of the new stuff on it and it couldn't even install the latest version of Chrome. It was like, yeah, you're done. I'm like, but it's not a bad machine. And with the iMac, it's such a nice screen that I'm like, I still want to use this. And really what I use it for is ham radio. It's literally shoved in a closet. My ham radio is attached to it. I log my contacts. I use it to do some digital modes. So I don't need it to do a lot. But I threw in the towel. I'm like, I'm going to put Ubuntu on it. Oh, amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. So I don't know. I think for you, that hardware is still good enough for what you need, right? Because all it's doing is serving those hard drives to your miner. Is that what it's doing now, or is it doing anything else?
It's just serving. Yeah, it's just this. Just the plots are being exposed to the miner. Yeah. It's not mining. It's not doing anything. It's just sitting there serving those. Yeah, well, runs those drives.
And you know what's wild about that too is actually, so the TrueNAS box that I was talking about, it is an, I should actually look at what processor is in this thing. So this is the box I got from that guy who was getting rid of it. It is an i7-4790. So old, right? Even older than yours right there. What I've been shocked by and what I'm hoping actually gets better even tomorrow. So like I said, I'm running Frigate on there. Mm-hmm. Well, Frigate has gotten really advanced. It does a lot of semantic search. It has some models in there for the object detection. And right now, the way I have it is actually using the GPU object detection from my Unraid box. So it takes the objects and it sends it over because Frigate allows you to utilize DeepStack on a different machine. So that is how I'm now able to, you know, I'm kind of saving the CPU on this box. But one thing that I read about that a guy did, and he's like, oh, you'll be super impressed. Have you seen the Google Coral TPUs? Uh-uh. They're just so it's a USB stick, or they come in M.2 form factor. So either one, so you get a USB stick. Essentially, it's like a little AI accelerator. So for $60, you've got something that can run a model. So really cheap. Think of it like if you need something that would need a graphics card, but not graphics, right? So think of like your Ollama, right? When you're running your AI, but it's really good for this sort of like object detection type work. Mm-hmm. So a $60 USB stick plugged into a super old computer, all of a sudden that computer is still very viable for my server needs, right? It's serving all my hard drives, and it's also running running 9 4K cameras, my 9 4K security cameras, like a dream without breaking a sweat. And so I like finding ways that you can limp along these older machines and making them, you know, have a second life, even if it's not doing what it used to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that, I had the Morrow data box that kind of crapped out on me, and I ended up doing some backup stuff. We talked about that here on the show. I put Linux on it for, you know, it's just 2 gig of RAM, and I replaced, it had a 1 terabyte spinner that was for all the storage, and I took that out and I put in a 250 gig SSD. So, I put Linux on it because I wanted to see, okay, well, let's get a light version of Linux on it. Worked great. I could remote into a Windows desktop if I needed, you know, I could go into the box and get to a Windows desktop if I needed to. But it's over by the Whiskey Collection. And one of the things I've been thinking about from an AI perspective is coming up with a way to keep track, an AI way to keep track of the whiskey. So what I really want to do is hold the bottle up to a camera, and it scans it and says that, and it's that bottle, and you got that much left in it. And then I put it on the shelf, keeps track of the collection. Well, okay, I'm not there yet. That's a little harder. That's going to take some Python code and some other stuff. It'll come in time. What I did find, though, is Android on x86 using Bliss, the Bliss OS.
So yeah.
Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of it, but I haven't, no.
Just found it this last week. Both on my iPhone and the Android tablet that I have here up on the desk, I've been using Only Dram, which is a whiskey. It's just a whiskey bottle tracking application. And when you're in the store, you can bring it up and put a bottle in. It'll tell you what the MSRP should be, right? It's that kind of stuff. Not super fancy. It does have a QR code scanner in it, so you can scan the bottle and it'll find the bottle, right? It's a cool little app, but it's only iOS and Android. And over there where the whiskey collection is, I don't have one of those devices. Now, can I carry my phone over there? Yes. Do I want a dedicated screen over there for the whiskey collection? Yes. So I started thinking, hey, wonder if I could get Android to run on. First of all, I thought, maybe I'll run Android as an emulator on Linux, right? I got that working. It's not very good, to be honest. It was okay. And then I thought, are we to the point where we have good Android applications, not emulators, but how good does Android run on x86 natively? Bliss? It's great. Like,
is Bliss from Samsung?
That's a good question.
There was something with Samsung, and I couldn't remember if that was the exact one.
Yeah, there it says available. It says available for just about any Chromebook, PC, or tablet released in the last 10 years. Like, talk about using old equipment, right? If you just go to bliss.org, BLISSOS.org, BlissOS.org, and Mike, talk about breathing life. I mean, Android was built to run on nothing for the most part, right? And put it on top of, talk about using old hardware. So I got it running. I have an Android instance. I can log into it. I could put it on a touchscreen if I wanted to. This isn't a touchscreen, but I could put it on a touchscreen if I have a big 24-inch touchscreen that I could use. I'm not gonna, but and get the screen orientation figured out. And guess what? That app just pops up on that screen right by the whiskey collection, and I can keyboard and mouse anything, which is kind of actually better for that kind of stuff than so use the phone to enter it in, and then it just shows up in the database. And if I want to go through and look for any of that,
genius.
Yeah, that. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, if I can run Android on x86, that all of a sudden these apps that aren't available. Okay, my Blue Yeti app, only iPhone and Android. And there's been some, like, I bought an Android tablet just so I could run it there. Wait a minute, I could be running this on x86.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't really thought all the way down that path. Like,
I
somehow either. This happened and I never knew. You know, and I know it's been out there. Listen, people listening, like, oh my God, Jim, it's been happening for 1,000 years. How could you not have known?
But it takes the right use case. And it takes, like, that was, you had a use case where, like, okay, this would be a perfect solve for it before you really have to dive in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's just one of those kinds of things when you think, like, hey, I have a app that I need, and I don't necessarily, where the phone or a tablet is not what you want, you know, and you're like, oh, and it runs on really crappy hardware, you know? So anyways, that was one of these finds. You're like, how did I miss this?
Yeah.
For the last 5 years, how did I not know this was even not a thing? But you're right. It's use case. Right.
Oh yeah. Was me and the Coral TPU. Those Corals are old. Like they're old news. But until you have a use case, like I have a super old machine that doesn't have a graphics card in it and it needs to have some sort of this object detection that is just hammering the CPU. Yeah. And for a $60 USB stick, perfect.
Yeah.
And I've still just been really impressed with all the things you can run on Ollama and all the different, you know, models you can run. That Lava Vision model. Just you feed it an image and you can ask it absolutely anything. And I think I might have talked about this last time, but I mean, essentially now when I look back through my frigate footage, every single object it detects, there is this 2-paragraph long description describing what's going on in that scene.
Wow.
And that is all done by every time frigate takes that, sends it over to my Ollama model, asks it, hey, describe what's in the scene. And then when you go to semantic search, all of that, it's like metadata. Right? You have a 2-paragraph metadata on what was going on there. And even this last time I noticed, I looked at the car in the driveway and it said, there's a lot of tracks in the snow in the driveway. It looks like this is a place where a lot of cars go in and out a lot, probably a driveway, just like something like that, that I would have been like, oh, I guess I wouldn't have thought that it would have looked at the tracks in the snow and said, oh, this is a heavily trafficked area by vehicles. But just, it's kind of interesting. All the things you can do with
those. Yeah. Now. Yeah. No, the model thing, we talked about this last week with Christian, and I talked about Jeff C., a friend, he's been on before. He's going to come on. We're going to talk about the modularization of AI in that we're getting really good at these very specialized AI models. By themselves, they're helpful, but as we start talking about communications or cross-modeling, in other words, you know, the if this then that or the Zapier of models, so that you can bring models in and then run them all together, or one model calls another model and says, hey, I need this kind of information. I know where that's at. I can call this model that's specialized. Like you're, you know, what you're doing with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I mean, just the fact that like you can run DeepSeek, like when DeepSeek came out with their model that you can run on this type of hardware.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Yeah. I will say like, everyone in our community is gonna groan, but I had this aha moment of how I can describe how useful AI can be to any business person who's ever had to send an email. Yeah. And what happened was I had a list of like 150 people that I needed to input into a new system that we're running. The system needed comma delineated, and I had this meeting invite that had everyone in it that I needed. I'm like, okay. But when you copy and paste out of Outlook, you know how it gives you the name of the person in parentheses and then their email followed by parentheses. And I'm like, no, I just need the email addresses, but it won't let you copy just the email. I was like, wait, I just went to ChatGPT, right? Said, hey, can you strip just the emails out of this and give them to me in a comma delineated list? 2 seconds.
Done. Yeah. No, for sure.
In the past, I would have gone to Excel and I would have done all the, found a different way. Yeah. And all of us nerds have our different ways we would have tackled that problem. Yeah. This was a 5-second solution.
Yeah.
And it's just like that's kind of manipulation and context of exactly what I was looking for. And what I like actually is when I run it on my own one, and you might be able to do this in ChatGPT too, but I don't know. You can click in and see its reasoning on how it thought through that problem. Because it even went through and then it's like, oh, hey, I noticed that this email's in there twice. He didn't tell me I wasn't asked to eliminate duplicates.
But
it was reasoning out I could have. And so it said, so I'm going to include it anyway. And then, you know, it was just the way it thought through. It was kind of creepy because it's exactly like if I had asked my 8-year-old to do this task and I said, tell me out loud what you're thinking. It's kind of what it was typing. Like, well, you asked me to do this, so I'll probably just go through and I'll do this. Yeah. And then you asked for a comma separated list. I think you'll probably want the space after the comma, not before. That seems to be standard. It's really cool. But like, that was my perfect example of like, okay. Like time saving.
Yes.
Cause I think a lot of people are like, like when would I ever use that in my day? I'm like, here's a good example. Data manipulation. Even if you're not a developer, you will probably have to do something like this before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Excel code, sometimes Excel by itself, the figured out the code.
Excel code is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I had, so just today I had 1,700 records in an Excel spreadsheet, email names, emails, addresses, zip codes. And I said, and I thought, okay, I'd like to, just based on email, and count for me the number of people inside organizations, and then tell me that organization, what the industry that organization is in. So,
oh, it, that's smart.
Yeah. So it went back through, and then it said, so it brought back through, you know, of course the higher counts were like yahoo.com and hotmail.com and google.com. Right. And then I said, okay, do the same thing, but eliminate, and you start filling stuff in. And then it would bring up another list, and I'd find, okay, I don't want those. I would take that. I don't want Gallup.com. Take those out.
Right.
And so you just keep building on this query, right? Type deal. And, you know, in the end, what I got was a real solid count. Like if I wanted to know the organizations that were represented by that email list, you could do that and then ask ChatGPT to give you information about those organizations. Like then tell me how big those organizations are, or then tell me what was the publicly posted revenue of that. Like this is all of a sudden where that gets super cool, right? Like you said, you could do all that in Excel with formulas and stuff. You're not calling like now. Okay. So maybe Google's one of the companies that's in our email address, but it Excel's not, I mean, I guess I could, but I can't just ask it now. Go tell me what the revenue of Google is and bring it in.
Yeah.
Right. So that was an interesting, for me, that was an interesting, like
that's a really good use case.
A case study, right?
Cause that's combining data manipulation along with outside context thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing research for me while manipulating my data. I mean, you kind of have your own little data scientist there with you, right? Where that would have been a project you would have asked.
It's a data science intern.
It's a data science intern. That's exactly right.
Hey, I need you to go study this, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. It's super cool. And it all came from a morning meeting I was in where somebody had asked a question like, hey, so do we know then fill in the blank, you know? And I was like, huh, yeah, in the past I would have said no. And in the meeting we said, yeah, that's a hard number to get to. And then I thought, is it hard to get to now? Like, can I think I can do this. Now, I have a 1 meg limit on the version of ChatGPT or a copilot, our internal copilot that blocks data from going, we have our own, right, keeps data from going out of the outside of the organization. Has a limit, but I could just ask somebody, hey, can you raise my limit to, you know, to 10 gig or 10 meg? I mean, Excel files aren't that big. So yeah, there's some cool stuff they can do. Joe says, I do find Copilot hallucinates quite a bit, but it does usually help me get to the end goal. I think sometimes, yeah, no, it absolutely can. Listen, this is one of those things, like, as I start asking it to count things, like, you have to verify that it's counting the right things.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for accurate balance to the penny kind of stuff, it's probably not the right thing to do. But if I'm trying to get a general feel, you know, if I got a big customer database in this case, and I was trying to get a feel for, based on their email domains, give me a percentage of this, of who's in this, group them by industry, tell me the revenue, break them down by revenue of those organizations. And I want to know if they're enterprise or if they're education.
Yeah.
Right. Could you do that in Excel? Totally. Can you do it in ChatGPT in about 3 seconds? Yes.
That's the game changer. It's just speed and efficiency.
Yeah.
Joe saying, you know, hallucination on Copilot. I do one quick update. I don't know if anyone else joined me in getting the Home Assistant voice box that they came out with. It's in early beta. So pre-order started in December. Essentially, it is what they're trying to get to is, could you have your own self-hosted Amazon Alexa?
Yeah.
Could you do that? So they came out with a hardware box for it. It's just a small rectangle, very flat. It's got a dial that is the exact same as the, do you remember the iPod where it would spin around and you
yeah.
in the middle and it physically spins?
Yeah.
That's the dial on top. I was pretty pumped for it. I can't remember how much they cost right now. I want to say right around like $30-40-ish.
Oh, it's not terrible.
Not terrible. Setup process was a breeze. It's terrible. It doesn't know what I'm saying. Like Hannah was laughing so hard because my nightstand is kind of known as like the tech collection because it's where I have a million things charging. I have 3 Meshtastic devices sitting on my nightstand, everything. And so she's like, "What's the new one?" And I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be great. Like if this is good, I could replace all the Amazon devices in the house." She goes, "Okay." And all I was trying to do was turn the lights off, and it was like. I don't know what scissors are. And I'm like, I didn't say scissors. I said, can you please turn off the lights? And then I was trying everything and it got maybe 30% of the time. Now this was the right out of the box. I got to play with some settings. I got to tweak some things.
Yeah.
But what it really highlighted to me was, man, like voice combined with contextual understanding what you're saying, tying into what you're exactly trying to do, especially in home automation. That's a tall task. I think my favorite part about the device is they do have Hey Jarvis as the
one. Oh, good.
Hey Nabu, which is Nabu Casa, their company, or Hey Jarvis. So I have the Jarvis one. It does do a really good job. I mean, they even talked about it last year, how hard getting a wake word is, like how hard it is to set up a piece of hardware that's only listening and activating on a word. It does really well. It will respond when I say Hey Jarvis, but the processing time and what it thinks it's hearing, that's going
to
take
some time. They'll have to, I mean, they got some catching up to do, right? I mean,
trying to do it on your local hardware.
Right.
So, right, like it all depends. And I have a pretty beefy Home Assistant box. You can use the Home Assistant cloud for processing, and apparently that's really good. But if I'm going to do this, I'm either going to use Amazon or I want this to all run on my hardware. Yeah. So I've got to play around with it some more, but it was interesting.
Can you, once you have the box set up, can another device with a microphone integrate in with it and you use that microphone to run?
Not with their box, but people over the last year have, because the software side of it has been done. Yeah. So the software side has been in Home Assistant for a while. So guys were making I took kind of the recipe that this guy did of like different hardware you can buy, ESP32 with this sort of microphone. They're janky looking, and then you got a 3D printed case. Yeah. So this was kind of Home Assistant's like, hey, here's like a pre-made option. I think what they're trying to do though is, yes, to your point, it needs better microphones of those things you could start to play around with. It does have, all it has on it is USB-C for power, and it does have speaker out, so you could stream music. Kind of like the Echo Dot has the aux out, so does the Home Assistant box.
I'm hearing rumors that there's a big upgrade coming for the A-Lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the rumors. Just quiet whispers of folks are saying, they're getting ready to release a new version of it that's way more powerful. And when I say way more powerful, I mean able to do multiple commands.
Okay.
So, you know, do this and then this and then this kind of deal, which today it's terrible. Although it's so funny I say that. It's a miracle it does what it does. You know, it's just all the things that we take for granted on that, you know, that box. I put a show in the room that I sleep in, and that thing, like, it's a clock, and then you turn the lights off, and within 3 seconds, it switches over to its night vision thing of the clock, and then it goes blank. And then if I pop up my head, it comes back on. It's like, oh, you're looking at me. Okay. Kind of thing. Oh, I'll give you the time. And that's probably what you're looking for, right? So, yeah, I think we may, in the next 9 to 12 months, see some beta stuff come from them. So
I'm such a fan of, I think I talked about this last time, I use the talking to ChatGPT feature in the app, and on my drive to work, I talk to ChatGPT, and you know, it's like my personal assistant. Why don't we have something like that built into these devices? Like, I would be shocked if we didn't get a ChatGPT box where I could do exactly what I'm doing through that app, with a device, right? And that type of very natural conversation can handle all sorts of requests, can remember things about you. I mean,
well, that's the remember things about you, Mike, is the hard part. Like, this is the thing. ChatGPT has that built in now in some regards, but we still have some things to figure out on all the security of getting those things remembered. You know? And you can now in ChatGPT say this, put in some data, and then say, remember this.
Right.
And it's got a database, right?
Yes.
That's tied to your account.
But that's where I was excited for the Home Assistant box, because like I have that power with a llama sitting in my server rack.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just let me have a conversation with that naturally.
Yeah.
I can do it actually sitting in front of my computer. I can do the same exact thing through the web browser with my Olama instance. It's fantastic. Yeah. I just am not always sitting in front of my computer, and they don't have an app the way I do it through the phone yet. But I'm like, just give me this experience in more places, and I'd be a very happy camper.
For sure. Joe says, he says, was trying to find some YAML code to make a sensor work with this other piece of equipment. It gave me an answer. It didn't work. When I told it didn't work, it provided the right answer. That's pretty awesome. And that's the kind of stuff it's, you know, that this is the thing I think we forget. You got it when it's wrong. It can be wrong. Just tell it it's wrong. It'll apologize and then try something else.
Yeah.
And so you got to, it's not going to be 100% out the gate. Brian says updates for the A-Lady, but he also heard it'll likely have additional subscription costs too. It doesn't surprise me. That won't last long. AI subscription stuff is the cat's out of the bag. It's a race to the bottom on this. They're all getting included in stuff. Now it doesn't mean it's going to be free. It just means, you know, Microsoft model is included in Office 365. Google, you got to buy their subscription piece. They'll get included in. I think the days of AI by itself being a subscription, for the most part, are pretty much over. I don't think we'll see too much more of that in the future here. They're all going to get blended into their products. Now, there will always be maybe like, not propensity. What's that one called? I want to say complexity. All I have is some exity. Why can't I remember it is? Anyways, there may be one or two in the future that stands alone on its own. It's got enough to do that. But I think most of the major players, certainly Facebook, it'll be a Meta thing that works with their headsets or works with Facebook. I tell you what, I hadn't thought of this till now. The metaverse may be the right place for AI, from being able to do things like in the metaverse. Sometimes doing stuff is really difficult.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're just like, this is way hard. And you're not writing code, but like, it's way harder than it needs to be. And I kind of wonder, the metaverse would be the place to say, hey, can you make this for me right now? And it just does it like the AI. And maybe that's already there. I don't know. I haven't put my headset on in a while.
I hadn't thought about that either, but you're totally right.
Yeah.
Pop me in the metaverse and be like, hey, can you put a 40-inch screen in front of me? I'm going to do some work right now. Place this over here. You know, I'm kind of trying to do this. And like, it's a world that's being created by code.
Yeah.
Let it do it. Like, yeah.
That seems like that would be the natural place for that natural language AI to really flourish. Like, because I get into it and I start moving around, I can't find places, and I'm like, how do I get out of this? How do I do this? How does this work again?
I think I've spent all of 10 minutes in the metaverse. I'm just usually playing your games, but I spend a lot of time in my VR headset. Still do. I've been addicted to it still.
But all of a sudden, it just becomes an extended desktop at that point. You know, you're kind of perplexity. Yeah, that's. Tony said propensity it's perplexity. Yeah. He said propensity first. It's perplexity. Yeah. Those are, that could stand, but yeah, you would think that would be the perfect place for, cause I don't want hand controllers. I just want to say, you know, I want to leave the room.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. Anyways.
And then just tap into my brain. So I have to say it. I can just think it.
Yeah, there you go. Ooh, I'm not sure it wants to tap this thing. It would be like, you're too dumb for this. Anything else, Mike?
No. we should make this, come back every month or so. Whenever.
Yeah, we'll schedule you. We'll look on the way out here. We'll look post show. We'll look and see what's available for you.
So. And like I said, I'll post updates on the board game in the chat for you guys. Really appreciate you guys asking.
Sounds good. Okay, hang with me real quick. We'll remind everyone to, if you want to join us, I mentioned earlier, if you want to join in the Discord group, it's really not a lot going on there, which is nice. But when we need something, you can post it there. Hit it at theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv, if you want to, for any kind of conversations. Neil, I haven't heard from you in a while, so send me an email, Neil. It's always nice to hear from you. And then don't forget this, theaverageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting powered by Maple Grove Partners. Of course, that's Christian. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. For more information, visit Maple Grove Partners, all one word, .com. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. Love to have you out here. A big thanks to Brian. Tony Rayner was out there. I saw Joe checking in. Justin was out with us. Ryan had joined us. Ken took the night off. He's always here, but Ken took the night off. And it could be you. You could be in there feeding us information in chat. And come out and join us. You can head out to theaverageguy.tv/live if you want to. Or we have a YouTube channel, two actually, a live one and a recorded one. You can subscribe to, and we'll just let you know when we're here. We'll be back, I think, next Thursday. I don't have it filled in yet, but I'll figure out how to get it in. And then we booked Jeff C. is coming the week after that. And I'm working on Bob and Ryan. See if we can get them on. Catch up with what's going on with the ThinkComputers.org. We'll be back probably next week. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.